Well, avian influenza, or bird flu, I guess we can call it, has been reported, I believe, in more than 20 states. And it can affect both domestic poultry and wild birds. And unfortunately, the health risk of avian influenza spreading to people pretty low. I'm thinking here. We'll find out some more as we talk with our guest for today, where we visit with precautions that you might want to take or at least think about or learn about as we talk with Paul McGraw. Paul is the state veterinarian and administrator of the Division of Animal Health with our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Dr. Paul McGraw, thank you for coming by and being with us today. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate you coming by. And I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. Maybe you're concerned about the bird flu affecting maybe your farm, if you're on a farm, or maybe your even small flock of chickens. We've got in Madison, for example, there are all kinds of small flocks of birds. So maybe you've got a concern about that, or maybe you've had an experience in the past with the virus as a consumer, as a farmer. What are your questions? Give us a call. Again, I know Paul's happy to answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. So please join in. And again, Paul, thanks a lot. Are there different kinds of avian influenzas out there, or is it just one, or what?
There are all kinds of different strains of avian influenza. There's highly pathogenic avian influenza, which means basically that it kills a lot of birds. This is the strain we had this year that started on the West Coast and moved into the Midwest, and it was a highly pathogenic where it was nearly fatal to over 90% of the birds once it struck a poultry farm.
Oh, and so what are we talking about losses there? I mean, thousands and thousands of birds, weren't there?
In Wisconsin alone, we depopulated over 1.9 million birds.
Oh.
Nationally, nearly 49.5 million birds.
Wow. So the low, and so that's the high is going to kill. And the low is a different kind of strain?
Right. There's low pathogenic avian influenzas. And what happens a lot with these avian influenzas is the wild duck and goose population can carry these birds, and occasionally it spills over into domestic poultry. Low path we'll see occasionally have a positive, and it just doesn't kill as many birds. Sometimes you don't even know the birds are sick. They'll just test positive for it.
Oh, interesting. And how long is it? What's the history of these viruses? How long has it been around?
The last time we had a highly pathogenic AI in Wisconsin was 1968. So it's not common to have this kind of an outbreak. In the country, there was 1984 was the last real bad one.
And at this particular moment, where are we standing?
So there's been no new positives anywhere for about a couple months now. All the infected premises have been depopulated. And in Wisconsin specifically, we had 10 affected premises, and they've all been depopulated, cleaned and disinfected, tested, and they're negative, and the quarantines have been released, so everyone's able to repopulate.
That's a very, obviously, it's a very, for the farmers, it's got to be a very sad thing to have, not only financially, but just, I mean, emotionally.
Very devastating. You know, they work with these poultry. They work with these birds. They're their livelihood. You know, they take good care of them. When this virus comes in and starts killing birds, it's very devastating. We do have federal indemnity that we're able to pay for the cost of the birds, but there's no replacement for the loss of the production and the loss of income.
Yeah, and then the emotional loss, which it's got to be, I would think, knowing from my own farm family background, that would be really, really tough. Greg in Watertown has a question for you, so let's go there. Greg, hi. Thank you for calling.
You bet, Larry. Thank you for a great show again. Say, I've read and heard that birds that are not confined, that don't live in a million in a building, stacked three layers high on in a postage-sized stamp set of antibiotics, not given a really good, healthy diet with a wide variety of things, that those are the birds that are susceptible. And birds that are raised on pasture in an open environment where they get to eat green things or they have a varied diet are essentially immune to this, or maybe they'll get sick, but it's not a devastating disease, and that we're essentially crafting our control mechanisms to the aid of big corporate farmers that have the birds living in appalling conditions. And I wanted to know if the guest has heard anything like that and if there is truth to that.
Okay. Comment, Paul.
Well, first of all, this virus is it kills backyard flocks too. We had a backyard small flock in Wisconsin that they raised chickens and ducks, and the ducks actually left the farm last fall, and they returned to this flock in the spring, and the chickens started dying soon after. So there's not a difference in susceptibility. While that we do know that it was devastating to several commercial flocks, the backyard flocks were not immune.
Is it, and maybe you could describe what happened. Is it a flu-like symptom in the birds themselves? Is that why we call it avian influenza?
Yes. Typically, you would see respiratory signs. You'd see, swollen around their head, swelling, having trouble breathing. Frankly, this virus, as hot as it was, they went from perfectly normal one day to you had chickens dying the next. So it was that rapid that it really did impact them.
Oh, my goodness. And obviously, and I shouldn't say obviously, but when you have birds or any animals in a confined situation, it's probably going to spread all the faster, I would imagine.
Right. Once a virus is introduced, and you also want to remember, once we have sick birds, they tend to become virus factories where they produce a lot of virus in a hurry. So until we get all the birds depopulated in a barn, there's risk of them spreading and shedding more virus to other birds.
Oh, Greg, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give others a chance to join in. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. I haven't gotten my flu shot yet for this year, but I'm going to be getting my flu shot, I don't know, certainly within the next several weeks. So that's people. What about birds? Do we even... when is the flu typically reoccurring in birds?
So there is some worry that when we get the migration of wild ducks and geese back through the area in the fall, that there's a chance to reintroduce the virus, that we could have risk again this fall. We've not had any cases yet across the country, and we hope we don't. It could be again next year, next spring in the migration. It's really hard to predict.
So the migration really is... can spread it in a hurry, I would suppose.
That seems to be when the virus can be introduced into the environment. And then the cooler temperatures, as it cools off into the fall, that virus, damp, cool conditions, it survives longer in the environment. So in the summer, while even if some of the birds here now are shedding the virus, it just doesn't live very long, so there's less chance to affect poultry.
And if it happens that quick, I was going to say, what are symptoms for anybody, no matter if you've got 10 birds or if you've got 10,000 birds, what are the symptoms?
Things you would want to watch for is that the birds would stop eating, maybe decreased egg laying if you have backyard egg layers. Any signs that they're just not looking well, you might see some droopy heads and those kind of things. And with this virus, it progresses really rapidly into high death loss.
And what is the state's responsibility in this?
So we have authority to control and eradicate disease to protect animal and public health. That's part of our Wisconsin statutes give us that authority. And this avian influenza did not, there's been no indication that there's been any public health risk. As you are aware, there are influenzas that can spread. So we do take precautions. We work with our local public health to make sure that people don't get exposed unduly to viruses. But our goal is to control this disease as rapidly as possible. So that means depopulating the affected flocks, cleaning and disinfecting, and prevent the spread of the virus.
See another call. James in La Crosse, up to you next. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I hope you can hear me all right. I'm in my van, but we had a caller ask about concentrated flocks versus, I guess, what was addressed was backyard flocks, and the speaker said backyard flocks were affected. But I'm wondering more particularly how well did free-range type flocks, kind of commercial free-range type flocks, fare compared to the concentrated animal feed operation? I know the CAFOs really took a hit this year. I'm wondering how the free-range commercial producers did.
How they did. Okay, good. Thanks, James.
So, you know, in Wisconsin, I can say that we had 10 affected flocks. 9 of them were commercial enclosed barns, and then mm-hmm. we had the one that was an outdoor backyard flock. I think across the country we saw a variety. It tended to be, though, if the flocks were, we just don't know how the virus got introduced. Historically, influenza viruses will affect more of the outdoor flocks. You know, if we look at what some of the commercial folks have done, both, your free-range commercial folks, they seem to have more exposure to wild birds, so a higher chance of getting infected. We haven't necessarily seen that with this high path avian influenza, though.
But not with this one, but in the past that's been kind of been the case.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so there you go. Thanks so much for that question. Appreciate it. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Appreciate your calls and comments, and certainly love to hear from you. The disease spreads by the bird sneezes, and you know what? How does it?
Lots of
basically,
ways.
Basically, lots of ways.
We know that the virus can be shed in the feces of the birds, and it can be shed into the environment even with nasal fluids, like you mentioned, sneezing. So it can also contaminate equipment, feeding equipment, trucks, your boots. If you're walking through a yard that happens to be contaminated, you can pick that virus up and move it. People can move it.
Or even tire tracks, I suppose.
Tires, if we're running through affected premises and pick up some bird poop. So lots of ways that it can move.
And, boy, we got some good questions coming up, Ashley and others. We'll get to you. We need to take a quick break, though. Our guest today, Dr. Paul McGraw, state veterinarian, administrator of the Division of Animal Health in our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, with us till 12:30, and we'll be back with Paul right after the news. Avian influenza, I guess better known as bird flu, is a virus that affects and infects domestic and wild birds, and for some people here in the state, it's pretty scary. Because they raise chickens in their own backyard, or they have large farm operations. And I'll tell you what, last spring we had a miserable time with avian influenza here in Wisconsin and across the U.S. So I'm really pleased to have Dr. Paul McGraw, state veterinarian, administers the Division of Animal Health with our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Paul, I bet you had some sleepless nights last spring, and was probably a pretty busy guy at that point, but great to have you back to talk about this influenza.
Thanks. Yes, it was a crazy spring. This was an unprecedented disease incident, both in Wisconsin and nationally.
Yeah, it's terrible. And we have lots of callers online with questions, and you may have one, too. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page, and we'll certainly be glad to have you join in right there. Ashley in Coloma has a question for you, so let's go right there to Ashley. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was curious about recognizing signs in the different species. I'm interested in raising some quail, and I was wondering if the effects of the flu and how you spot it are the same with quail as it would be for chickens.
So those effects would be the same. You would see, respiratory distress, maybe going off feed, drop an egg laying, those kind of things. I will say that we never had any farm-raised pheasants or quail. We've got a lot of commercial flocks like that in Wisconsin, and they never got this virus this spring. So
lucky there.
Yeah, and again, they're raised outside too, so it's unique. So hopefully they have a little higher immunity or some issue that won't be a problem.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Ashley. Appreciate your call. I love quail. Quail are very good to eat, and kind of pretty birds, too. Liz in La Crosse, thanks for calling. Hi.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Larry, for this topic, and thank you, Dr. Graf. I have four girls in my backyard, and because of the information that we were getting about, you know, during migration of the wild birds that basically carry it, my girls, I didn't let run around my backyard as much. So they're confined through chicken wire on a nice run. But I do have sparrows that get through the chicken wire and say, well, great, you're going to get some food. Do I need to be concerned that are sparrows known as a usual carrier, or is it more the migratory bird species? The other question is I usually refill the waters for the girls from my pond, which all the local birds say hello to.
Yeah. All right.
Well, good
questions, by the way. Thank you.
Sure.
First, on the sparrow issue, I think it's a chance that the sparrows would probably be more likely to act as a fomite, meaning they could pick up the virus and move it from one place to another. So there is a chance they could. I don't think that the virus probably survives in them like it does in ducks and geese, where they could be shedding all the time. It's always a risk, any type of birds. We are working with researchers that are sampling a variety of birds right now to see what kind of level of virus may be in all kinds of different birds in the area right now. As to the pond water, I definitely recommend fresh well water for your chickens.
Oh, because it can be in the water.
Yes.
That's kind of what I figured. So, all righty. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. I'll continue to listen and turn my radio back up.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Liz. And again, you can join me at Open Line at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. John called and couldn't hang on, but wondered, are turkeys and other large birds affected by the bird flu as well? And I assume by other large birds, he might, sandhill cranes, for example, I suppose.
So the research being done on this virus is showing that almost all birds are susceptible. Obviously, we had an issue in commercial turkey flocks where it was very devastating for them. We've not gotten any reports from DNR that they found high levels of any levels of death loss of the wild turkey population or sandhills, for that matter, from this virus.
And that turkey, wasn't that in the Barron area, Barron, Wisconsin area?
Yes.
There was one of the thousands of turkeys had to be... unfortunately,
right,
killed.
Had six large turkey flocks up there.
Yeah, and actually, Ted in Eau Claire wondered. He called in as well and wondered, where do all the bird carcasses? How do you dispose of them? Because there's a lot of, I mean, gosh, thousands of turkeys, for example.
Sure. In Wisconsin, we were fortunate enough that we've got trees, and trees we make wood chips and wood shavings out of, and we were able to use that carbon source to compost these birds right on the premises. So we didn't have to move any of these carcasses off-site. Basically, just make a big compost pile, and it worked really well for carcass disposal, decreased the risk of moving the virus, and worked really well here.
So the birds were dead, of course, and then covered with... a couple of feet or whatever of
right,
a
large amount of wood chips, and mm-hmm. and then that was monitored for the temperature to make sure that it basically heated up enough, and it kills the virus and will decompose the carcasses too.
And I'm wondering, this was it smelly after a time?
When it was done right, not very bad. You know, we as long as we had enough of the carbon source on there, it just heats up, and it wasn't a bad deal.
Oh, that's very interesting. I wondered how if they were buried or and I guess they were in a way. They were buried under wood chips.
Yes, but some of our other states had more challenges because they didn't have that carbon source, the wood chips, available. So then they looked at incineration or hauling to landfills or potentially burial on site, which we don't feel is quite as advantageous as the composting. And we work closely with our Department of Natural Resources to make sure that was all done appropriately, too.
That's very interesting. I didn't know how that worked. Bob in Oconee County, it's your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for the show today. My question is, if you're out goose or duck hunting this fall, bring birds home, you clean them, but you have chickens in your yard. what kind of precautions do you need to take so that they don't become infected with this influenza?
That's a good question, too.
I think you want to assume that those ducks and geese could have virus with them. Now, the virus doesn't survive, well, depending on temperatures, it can survive a while outside the environment. So as we cool off in the fall, I think you'd want to be sure that, do that in a separate location that your domestic chickens can't get exposed to any of the offal or any of the cleaning materials there.
Okay.
Okay, so it wouldn't be like airborne or something like that if you're cleaning them at home and the chickens are running around somewhere else.
It's a lesser risk. Definitely the direct contact would be the biggest risk.
Uh-huh. What about the carcasses once they're clean? What do you suggest for disposing of them?
Those should be disposed of either buried or disposed of with garbage and, bagged and not left out for any predators to get at.
Okay, that's what I want to know. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks very much for calling. And, Bob brings to mind another question that people have had is, well, what if I eat one of these it's a high pathogenic avian influenza bird. It just hasn't gotten around to dying yet, and I eat it.
So I think on the wild ducks and geese, a lot of times they don't show any illness. They may just have the virus and not be sick at all. But regardless, whether we're talking wild birds or domestic birds, there's been no public health risk. The food is safe. Cook the food like you normally would.
That pathogen dies at, 165 degrees or something?
Yeah, when you cook at a normal temperatures, there would be no risk of any virus spreading to people.
And frankly, you're not going to undercook chicken or that's...
Right.
So, okay, pretty safe that way. And again, Bob, thank you. Carl in calling from Mexico. Hi, Carl. Thanks for calling.
Trying desperately to get in here. I tried three different phone call lines to get in here so you could hear me. Avian flu here. I got something here you guys definitely need to check out. Pulsed electromagnetic field. More and more usage of this is being done. But the strange thing is, this technology has been around for 120 years. Tesla came up with it originally. And it works on avian flu and many other things.
Well,
it works for humans, it works for animals, and for invasive species.
Well, there we go, and it's not something that I've heard anything about electromagnetic. So you'd be passing the birds through some sort of electromagnetic field to cure them. Anything you've ever heard of, Paul?
I've not had this brought to my attention yet. It's something that I can follow up on and see what kind of research is out there. But to date, we've not been made aware of any treatment that's been beneficial toward this type of highly pathogenic AI
that's out there. All right. Thanks, Carl, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you with your questions and your comments, or maybe your experiences to share. Let me put it this way. What was the impact for consumers of this big outbreak, for example, of last spring, and what might we expect down the road?
So I think everybody probably realizes that the egg price has gone up. I don't have an exact number for you, but the eggs have gone up. I don't know that typically poultry has gone up dramatically. Part of the reason is we've also lost our export market for a good share of this, at least for Wisconsin and for several states where when this avian influenza was going on, other countries were not taking our poultry and poultry products. So that may have offset some of the losses.
And you'd think that, well, if you had smoked product or anything like that, that's not going to, you would think that that would not be a problem exporting or anything else.
Well, some of the export, that's kind of a tricky thing because disease is one issue that countries can stop importing our products for. And avian influenza, especially the high path, has impacted, devastating impact on the commercial producers and the products that they export.
What are we doing now to kind of monitor? Are we monitoring the presence or lack thereof?
So there's two phases here. We are working with our wildlife agencies, and they've got some studies going on to look at what's out here in the environment right now. Is the virus here now in some of these birds that are here? They're going to be looking at the fall migration, working with hunters to get samples of hunter-killed birds to see what kind of virus may be present there. And then on our on the poultry side, you know, one, we work closely. We've got four meetings coming up here the month of September to introduce to explain what went on in the spring and to kind of give our poultry producers some idea what kind of biosecurity can go on. So the individual looking at the birds is one thing. There's also a lot of sampling done of commercial birds before those birds are shipped to slaughter and those kind of things.
So these meetings, talk about these meetings again. Who's the audience for the meetings?
And actually, we mailed out to all of our registered poultry premises. In Wisconsin, livestock premises registration is mandatory. So if you have chickens, even one chicken, you're required to register with the state. So we know to notify you if we do have an issue going on in your area. So we actually mail to all of those registered premises anyone that has poultry, and inviting them in, we'll give an overview of what the incident was in the spring and then talk about some biosecurity and mostly answer questions.
And these meetings, where are they held? Where are they going to be held?
We've got one coming up actually tomorrow night here at Madison, the Department of Agriculture, and then Eau Claire, Wausau, and Appleton. And information can be found on our website at the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection.
Okay, so Madison tomorrow night already.
Yes.
And then Eau Claire a little bit later. Eau Claire, Wausau, and Appleton, probably in that order.
Yes.
And so if you go to, and we may already have a link on our Facebook page. I bet we do. Cheyenne's probably got a link at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page to the department. But if you go to the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, let's see, what is it, WDTCAP?
Yeah, DATCP.
DATCP, that's the acronym for it. You're gonna find out about those meetings, and certainly sounds to me like one that if you've got some birds, you're going to probably want to attend. Will there be follow-up? I mean, will there be information handed out at those meetings? And
yeah, and everything will also be made available on our website. We've got some documents now to heighten biosecurity and those kind of things that producers can do to help protect their own flocks.
So there's stuff, there are information sources up right now that you
right.
can go to and grab. Deborah in Michigan has a question for you, so let's go to her. Deborah, hi, thank you for calling.
My sister lives across the street from Lake Superior in Marquette, and she had a cormorant on she uses a litter box for compost.
Yeah.
He had been walking on the beach this day and put a little tiny crayfish she found in it that was dead, which is probably not a good thing either. But anyway, this cormorant, she sent me a picture. She said this has been sitting in the backyard for six or eight hours. And so I said it's hungry. We both called the wildlife bird people there. They wouldn't take it, but she said, they said, just wrap it in a towel and bring it down to the beach if it's still there tomorrow morning. But she woke up and it was dead, and she said she was worried about the bird flu. So what do you think?
It's there's a lot of reasons. There's a lot of different things that could kill a bird.
Mm-hmm.
We would expect more of a widespread die-off if it was a concern with avian influenza. But I think you did appropriately is contact the wildlife agency for a wild sick bird. And I know our Wisconsin DNR does have a wild bird hotline also.
Oh, so there is a hotline.
In Wisconsin, there is, yes.
Yeah, so a person could call if a person observes a. What would the bird be acting like? Is there a typical acting?
Cormorants. There's a number of different things that Newcastle's disease and different things. So it's hard to say. But a sick, unusual bird like that, it could be a number of different things. It's not likely to be avian influenza.
Not likely. Okay, there we go, Deborah. Thank you very much for calling. And again, we could just actually review and go back to. Let's say you've got some chickens or ducks, and how would they act if they had this influenza?
I think you would expect to see the birds back off feed, where they wouldn't be eating as much. If they are laying eggs, they may drop off on egg production. And with this avian influenza, we're seeing a rapid progression of clinical signs where they have trouble breathing, and they may have trouble neurologic signs where they may be stumbling, and it has been leading to rapid death.
But as we look at it now, they're here in Wisconsin, we don't have any cases, do we? Or at least that we know about.
Correct. The last affected flock was depopulated in May, and we haven't had any new cases since then.
And what about the country as a whole?
The same there. It took a few more weeks in Iowa and Minnesota before they got the last flock depopulated, but there's been no new reports throughout the country yet.
And of those flocks that were depopulated here in Wisconsin, what's the process been like to sort of repopulate?
So there were 10 affected flocks in Wisconsin, and once the birds were depopulated and appropriately composted, they had to wait a certain amount of time. We had to clean and disinfect the barns, and then there was a 21-day waiting period after that, during which we actually sampled these barns to make sure there was no influenza virus. And once that time was completed and the samples were negative, we released the quarantine and they were allowed to repopulate.
And they've all repopulated?
They're all in the process
repopulating. Yeah,
they've been approved to repopulate.
Yeah, that's not something you can do overnight.
Right. Some of these large egg layers, it may take them up to a year to get to full production again.
In addition, okay, we've talked about avian influenza the whole time. You guys, as a state veterinarian, you're looking at a lot of different diseases. What are some of the other ones that you've observed or had to deal with over time?
Well, we can talk about tuberculosis in cattle. You know, it's a disease we eradicated. We've not had a we've been accredited free since 1986 in Wisconsin. Brucellosis is another one. Bang's disease we think of, and also. Several of the diseases we work with are also zoonotic, meaning they can go from animals to people, and that heightens our concern, obviously, and why would we want to respond to those.
Yeah, and in Newcastle, you mentioned Newcastle earlier.
So, there's a wild strain of exotic Newcastle disease that cormorants tend to often get. But there was also the virus in domestic poultry in California back in 2003 that was a devastating disease, too.
So, but that has not, that we're not getting.
Not had that in Wisconsin.
Okay. If people want to learn more, again, let's go back to the meetings that are coming up. We got four meetings tomorrow night in Madison. And what time is that?
From 6 to 8.
From 6 to 8, and it's at the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection offices, which are just kind of a really kind of a pretty place, actually. It's up on a nice hill just outside of Madison. And then we're going to Eau Claire and Wausau and Appleton as the same kind of the same group of people that are going to be doing that as well, I would guess.
Right.
Well, this has been great, Paul. I tell you, it's... It's not only financially but emotionally. This for farmers, well, for anybody who owns these birds, to have to have them eliminated. It's a terrible thing.
Right. Hopefully, we can prevent it and heighten biosecurity, and we don't see any more in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and we'll keep our eyes peeled. And thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, Larry.
Paul McGraw is the state veterinarian and administrates the Division of Animal Health with our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. So go to the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, datcp.wi.gov, and then I think if you type in something like animal diseases, you're going to get to the page that has a lot of information about avian influenza, and it also has a lot of information about those meetings that are coming up. And if you own birds, hey, you ought to think a little bit about maybe attending those meetings. We have lots more coming up this afternoon. Tomorrow, as a matter of fact, we'll talk about choosing a back-to-school laptop for your youngster, among other things. I was doing a little of that myself here in the last week or two. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and please stay with us. Lots more in store through the afternoon.